Maybe? I'm close, I think. About to snap. It's phenomenal the way he hits everywhere inside me at once. A masterpiece of biology that something could work so gloriously, and I just need a little more. Just a little more. Shit! His thrusts quicken. He buries his face in my throat, and I think he's getting close. I think he didn't expect it. He doesn't want to come, not yet, but this might be fully out of his control. And it's what I want, to see him lost in something. You're good. This is good. I urge him, and the word is such a paltry substitute when what I mean is, this is the best thing I've ever felt, and thank you. And whatever you want, really, whatever you want, just take it. Fuck, he says again, and I see it in his face, the second it's all over for him. His hand closes around my hip, holding me to him while he presses as far as he can go, and then I feel his cock jump in quick, jerky movements. Elsie. I'm moaning. He's gasping. His skin slides against mine, sweaty. And my body clamps down on him. His back tenses into a slab, and I hold him while his hips turn erratic, then stop. Then the heat spreading inside me comes to a halt. I watch Jack's eyes go blank, feel him bite my collarbone like I'm his anchor, like he wants to be reminded that I'm really here. The grunts he lets out come from somewhere deep inside him, somewhere I doubt he himself knows. And I hold him to myself until his orgasm dies down to a few clumsy, involuntary thrusts. I'm still buzzing with thrumming, unsnapped tension. And it should be frustrating. It is frustrating that he came and I didn't. That there's heat pushing against the seams of me, simmering from within. But it was good anyway. And after a moment, he pulls out, breaths rapid and choppy, and looks down at me. His expression is shaken, a little astonished. Shit. He breathes into my neck, his heart a drum against my skin. I cannot stop trembling.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. He pushes my legs open with his palms, and I arch like a rainbow when he slides two of his fingers inside me, feeling blissfully full again. He can kiss me properly now, soft, deep, hungry, and says,
let me. I'm going to.
He's more reptilian brain than anything else. I'm wet with his cum and my own slick, and he draws vast, beautiful circles around my clit that immediately push me over the edge. I shut my eyes tight and come in strong waves, and when I do, he pushes inside me again, something delicious to clench around, something beautiful and grounding. And when we fall asleep like that, I think that wherever it is that we're going, maybe, just maybe, it might turn out to be a place I never want to leave. 22. Critical mass. When I wake up, the sun is high in the sky, and shadows have shortened to little stumps. It's the latest I've been in bed since that time I got the flu during freshman year and spent 48 hours hallucinating that my skin was an eggshell, and my skeleton had finally grown enough to hatch out of it. There are no nightmares today, just a feeling of bone-deep rest. And Jack's big body curved behind me, arms wrapped around my torso like a cross, securing me to him. It's not unlike the way I awoke exactly 2 weeks ago. Except that we're naked, our skin tacky. This time, he is going to have to change the sheets. Something nags at the back of my skull, telling me that I can't afford to waste time, that I should get out of bed and be productive, answer emails, clean the oven, by a cemetery plot. I shush it and stretch in Jack's arms. He stays asleep, hard once again. I wonder if it's another P-rection. If...
a what?
Oh, shit. Nothing. Did I say it out loud? Jack's voice is a deep rumble.
Did you just...
Nope. Nope. I hide my face in my pillow. This is why I don't sleep in. If I get the amount of rest I actually need, my head-to-mouth filter stops working and... Jack's hand slides down past my stomach. He starts grinding drowsily against my ass, and my mind blanks.
Okay,
he asks, half asleep. Please, I hook my foot behind his shin. He presses an open-mouthed kiss on the curve of my shoulder.
You did say that we might have to work on the sex.
I stiffen. If it wasn't good, I said.
Was it not good?
I thought it was, but what do I know? He's the expert here. I'm sorry, I...
Elsie, work on how little I last.
He bites the spot where he kissed me, and then his cock is rubbing against me, breaching my entrance. He makes a few soft, grunt-like noises next to my ear, then presses to the hilt in one single push. I spasm around him, and the drag against my muscles is sun-extinguishingly good. It's still a snug fit, but I'm wet from his cum, soft from sleep, and he slides inside like a dream. He pinches my hard nipple like he knows exactly what my body wants, even when I don't. His palm presses against my abdomen, and I wonder if he can feel himself move within me, if he can tell how full I am. His thrusts are long and slow, at once leisurely and forceful enough to shift my entire body closer to the headboard.
Okay, okay,
He laughs ruefully, breathless against my throat, and I reach behind me to touch his cheek, to hold on to him.
Maybe you should be in charge before I fuck you into the mattress again.
Shockingly, I'm still capable of blushing.
Just move.
He presses a kiss where my neck meets my shoulder.
Do what feels good. Let me see you. Yes. Yeah.
I grind my ass against his abdomen, shallow, slow. Awkward at first, because the position is weird, and because what even am I doing? But my hips circle in a long, sinuous move, and something hits just right, and we gasp in unison.
There,
he murmurs against my ear, angling my hips to give me even more.
That's how I make you come. My mind blurs.
You already made me come. He makes a guttural noise.
I want to feel it when my cock is inside you.
I moan, and then I'm not in charge anymore. The pleasure gushes inside me, scarily strong, quicker than I thought possible, unraveling like an avalanche. I squeeze his fingers and he squeezes back, and when my body clamps down on his, he does press me into the mattress and he does fuck me like his control is not fully there, and he does say my name over and over like a war chant. He smells like sex and our sweat and the best sleep I've ever had, murmurs sweet, filthy things in my ear, promises that he'll never let me go. The sun is high in the sky. Jack is deep inside me. And I smile into the sheets for no particular reason. I think I might be happy. Though due to a lack of hands-on experience, I cannot be sure. But in the bathroom, while chasing droplets down Jack's throat, my legs wrapped around his waist as he pushes me into the tiled wall, I wonder if maybe this is it. This warm, comforting weight glowing shyly behind my sternum could be something like hope. Hope that there'll be more days like this one.
Stop smiling like that,
he whispers in my ear. The jet of the shower pounds over his back, and his lips taste like hot water.
Or I'll be on you all day.
I laugh into his neck and pretend I didn't hear him. The clock in the bathroom, the one I imagine Jack curses at when he runs late in the morning, reads 12:37.
I towel myself dry, buzzing with possibilities, with the tenuous, burgeoning impression that, for once, I'm not running away, but heading somewhere.
Food,
he tells me once I'm wearing my, his, hoodie and a pair of socks that won't stay up on my calves. His smile is handsome, self-deprecating.
I have these elaborate daydreams that I'm feeding you a 5-course meal I hunted, field-dressed, and prepared all by myself,
he says with a kiss on my forehead. Why? He gives me an arch look.
Don't ask why, like it's a rational impulse. So, what do you want?
What can you make?
Nothing.
He shrugs at my startled laugh, then throws me over his shoulder to take me downstairs. I feel like a sparkly drink.
I'll learn. It's a new obsession for me.
I can't remember the last time I giggled this much. The 5-course meal turns out to be slightly burned grilled cheese with boxed tomato soup. I sit on my stool at the island, and he eats his own standing across from me. It's simultaneously the most ordinary and the best thing I've ever tasted. On my phone, there is a text from Cece. Timestamp, 9:23 a.m. Cece. I'll never spend the night at Jack's, she said. I'm destined to die alone, strangled by the tumble of cobwebs that have overtaken my vulva due to sexual inactivity, she said. I laugh, and Jack smiles just because of that, which is a little unlike him and also stupid. He's stupid. I'm stupid. We're stupid. Or maybe we're just 16. Jack Smith. Jack Smith Turner. Jonathan Smith Turner and I have had sex. More than once. More than once. And now we're having breakfast at 1 p.m. This is not my timeline, but I'll claim it anyway. I tell him about the science of grilled cheese, the negative surface charge of the lipid molecules, stress and strain, the optimal pH, which should always be somewhere around 5.5.
Manchego, then, he says. Or mild cheddar. Gouda, too.
My heart is spinning dizzily at the thought of this man who knows the pH of different cheese types off the top of his head when my phone beeps. A reminder to change my insulin pod. I consider putting it off till I'm home, then look at Jack and think, honesty. This day, this not too good soup, this man with a black hole tattoo peeping out of his t-shirt sleeve, they are too good to not spend some honesty on. I'm going to need a few minutes upstairs, I say, hopping off the stool, but I'll be back.
What's going on?
Just need to change my insulin pod. I rummage in my purse and then hold my kit up triumphantly. A pale yellow bag with little hedgehog Cece got me years ago. Don't worry, you don't have to be there. I know people get squeamish. I'll do it in your bedroom. Show me how you do it. He puts down what's left of his sandwich, washes his hands. I laugh. Why?
Because I want to know.
Why would you? Oh, my God. You want to put high fructose corn syrup in my insulin. Was this a long con to murder me? He smiles and shakes his head.
I'm starting to be partial to the way you bypass all rational explanations for everything I say and dash straight to me being an unhinged serial killer.
I think it's our thing. His biceps bunch up when he leans his palms against the table.
Show me how it works, he repeats.
It sounds like a soft order, and I answer with a soft question. Why?
Because I want to know these things.
There's something unsaid in this.
Because I want to know your life.
Maybe. Or
because I want to know you.
My eyes fall on the kit, and I picture myself using words like reservoir and expiration advisory and ketoacidosis, explaining how each component works. I've never said some of those words out loud. They live exclusively in my head, together with the rest of my problems. Even Cece knows only the basics. But this is Jack. So I swallow. Do you have any disinfectant? The dimple is back.
I thought you'd never ask.
Less than an hour later, I settle between his long legs on the couch, toes brushing against his calves, his hand splayed on my stomach under the hoodie. He refuses to watch the end of Twilight. I think I've seen enough, but agrees with me that New Moon is the best in the series.
Relativistically.
Curls around me for a 2-hour nap during eclipse.
You smell like me. You should always smell like me.
And then wakes up as the afternoon stretches into evening, just in time for Bella's unexpected pregnancy.
This is atrocious,
he says, laughing at every single thing the characters do.
Shut up!
He laughs harder against my nape.
Shut up! She could die!
More laughter. It's about the hardships and sorrows of the universal human experience, Jonathan. He nibbles on my ear a little too hard.
Still better than 2001, Elsie.
Obviously. Something occurs to me. By the way, is Millicent okay?
Yup. Why do you ask?
It's Sunday. Shouldn't she be calling you with a vital emergency? Isn't the newspaper boy tossing the Times into her rose bushes or something?
Pretty sure newspaper delivery hasn't worked like that since the early 2000s. And she did her weekend routine yesterday. Sent a photo of an alligator coming out of a toilet in a Florida gas station. Claimed it was happening in her ensuite.
She knows how to send pictures?
Impressive, right?
He drums his fingers against my stomach.
I stopped by for lunch, gave her the novel, got scolded for not taking you.
Oh, I flush. With pleasure?
Can't remember the last time she liked someone. Not that she'd admit to liking you.
I laugh. Then, after a few seconds, I hazard. She told me she liked your mom. There is a change in Jack, but not for the worse. He doesn't stiffen, just seems less relaxed, a little more on guard when he says,
I think so.
I'm encouraged. She was a physicist, right?
Yeah.
Theoretical? He lets out a deep, overacted sigh that lifts me up and down.
Unfortunately.
I pinch his forearm in retaliation. Rudely, he doesn't notice. I'm tempted to bring up the article, find out how he could do something like that to his mother, to all of us, and demand that he take ownership of its consequences. But I also don't want to disrupt this fragile, new, radiant thing we have. And after a bit of arm wrestling, the latter pull wins. And what I ask is, do you have memories of her? I feel him shake his head.
She died too early.
Did she? I roll around till I'm face down on top of him. Look like you?
There aren't many pictures. My family mostly scrubbed the house clean of them.
If he's bitter about it, I cannot tell. When did you take her last name? He laughs softly.
That was Millicent's decision, actually. She had me legally change it when I was 10. I think she felt uncharacteristically guilty.
He pushes a strand of hair behind my ear.
I do know that she was Swedish, blonde. Her eyes had the same weird...
heterochromia?
Yeah. She was taller than my father, and kept some detailed diaries about her work. Millicent gave them to me when I started becoming obsessed with physics.
Did she have any publications? His jaw works.
Just 2. She got married halfway through her doctorate and didn't go back to work after she had me. Her diagnosis came quickly after.
His tone is wary, like he's choosing his words carefully. Why didn't she go back? He exhales.
There were issues with the lead researcher of her group.
Why?
They had some disagreements over their joint research. He was intensely controlling. She refused to abide. You can imagine the rest.
His face is blank.
Her diaries are... She wasn't well when she found out that she wouldn't be allowed back.
That's bullshit. How dare he cut her out of her own research group? Jack doesn't respond. His pause feels a little longer than normal.
Her work was on semiconductors.
My eyes widen. That's not my field, but I know a bit about it because it's one of the topics my mentor works on. I wonder if I read Jack's mom's papers years ago without even realizing it. An invisible string tying us together. Good stuff?
Very solid, yes.
I bet she was great. I mean, she was a theoretical physicist.
True. On the other hand, she did marry my dad.
Good point. Maybe he used to be more engaged with his surroundings?
Maybe. Maybe she needed a green card or the Smith money.
She was a grad student. It's a move I can respect, for sure. His smile is fond and has me asking, do you miss her? A long pause.
I don't think you can miss someone you've never met, but
he organizes his thoughts, orders his feelings.
It's easy to look at how dysfunctional my family is and laugh it off now that I have my own life. But when I was in my teens, there were times when things got really bad at home. And I'd read her diaries and think that maybe if she'd been around, everything could have been.
His throat works.
But she wasn't.
I felt out of place my entire life, and nothing anyone ever said made me feel any less so. So I stay silent and just lean forward, hide my face in Jack's throat, press a kiss to his Adam's apple right as it moves. His hand comes up to cup my head, keep it there, and I feel him turn to the screen again. Bella's pregnancy complications are getting alien-like, and he groans into my hair.
Elsie, I can't watch this.
But it's the best part. The emotional roller coaster of her transformation. The inappropriate Jacob plotline. Her face when she drinks blood.
No way.
Fine. You may amuse yourself otherwise, but stay close because you're a space heater disguised as an organic life form.
Perfect.
He lifts me like I'm a pliant little thing, flips us around, braces himself over me. I can only watch him in confusion while he lowers himself down my body with a concentrated frown between his brows, and then lifts my hoodie as though, is he? He's not. Is he actually? What are you doing?
You told me to amuse myself.
I sit up on my elbows. I meant take another nap or do today's Wordle.
Just watch your movie, Elsie.
But he takes my hips within his hands and holds me like I'm a precious artifact, at once firm and gentle. His kisses between my legs are long, savoring, messy, slow licks that have me arching up against the couch and trembling into his mouth. There is something shameless about this, the way he enjoys it, the sounds he makes. The fact that he seems to go away at moments, like he does this for his pleasure more than for my own. Oh, I say, clawing my nails into his scalp. His arms wrap around my thighs, palms holding my knees open. And for a while, I manage to swallow down the begging, moaning sounds in my throat. Then, no more. Oh, Jack! And I come once. Then, once again, then some more. And then his shirt is off and he's above and inside me, patient thrusts as he kisses me endlessly and tells me how beautiful I am, how much he loves this. Breathless laughter against my gasps as he reminds me of when I was afraid that this wouldn't be good between us, that this resplendent, life-altering, unearthly sort of pleasure might not be enough.
It was cute.
He rasps in my ear.
How you thought that fucking you once would make me want to fuck you less.
I cling to the sweaty muscles of his back, feel my entire body shake, and when he orders,
eyes on me,
my lids flutter open and we both come. The pressure in my belly and chest is heavy, overwhelming, delicious, and my nails sink into his shoulders as the evening becomes night.
Second time we do this with twilight in the background,
he says. I can't believe we missed the part when Bella beats up Jacob.
Jesus, Elsie. What is this movie?
The room is pitch black except for the glow of the TV. I laugh into Jack's skin, and it feels just like coming home. He won't let me leave. Though, to be fair, I'm not trying very hard. I have class at 8 a.m. tomorrow.
Doesn't matter.
At Boston University.
Still doesn't matter.
I need to get to my place, get dressed, pick up my stuff, take the bus.
I'll drive you.
Drive me where?
Anywhere.
I'm sitting on the counter while he chops carrots for the soup I'm craving. The recipe is pulled up on his phone, a bright red ad for a couples cooking class blinking at us from the counter. You'd have to wake up at like 6. I cannot ask you to do that. He sets down the knife and comes to stand between my legs. Even like this, he's taller than me. I'm trying to resent him for that, but my heart has grown a million sizes in the span of the last 7 days. It's about to float away into the sky.
You don't have to ask.
He kisses the tip of my nose, then my mouth, then my nose again.
Because I'm offering.
My heart swells some more. I'm running out of space.
What if I say no? Don't do that, okay?
I break into a smile, and his hand slides under my hoodie and up my waist. I love this, just as much as I thought I hated him. And Jack's right. This is going fast. Too fast, maybe. But I wonder if certain relationships are living proof of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. Their position and their velocity simply cannot both be measured at the same time, not even in theory. And right now, I'm too busy savoring where we are to consider anything else.
What?
He asks. I shake my head. Just thinking.
Thinking of...
You know, during my interview, I was picturing how it would be if I got the job, working with you. And I had these painstakingly intricate fantasies.
His interest is piqued. Did I pack you sandwiches in a Twilight lunchbox?
I laugh. Oh, no.
Were you wearing that red dress from Yale and I bent you?
No. I can still blush. Amazing. It was mostly me harassing you into quitting in disgrace.
I see.
He looks intrigued.
What were you going to do?
You know, jello your office supplies, spread the rumor that you poop in the urinals, frame you for white-collar crimes, those kinds of things. His expression is delighted. I mean, I could still do it.
You could.
Some would say I should.
Some would.
He kisses the corner of my smile. Maybe next year, he says, and it sounds low and hopeful, a promise nestled inside it. And I realize that I'd love to accept George's offer because I want to work with her, because I want to dedicate my brain power to liquid crystals, because I want to not spend 11/15 of my time commuting between campuses, and because I want to have enough money to surprise Cece with little hats for her ugly, murderous quill nugget. But this man, who was going to be the absolute worst part of my dream job, might still turn out to be the thing I want the most. To no one's surprise, I end up staying. And because of what happens on the following day, it turns out to be a pretty good decision. 23. Freezing point. I get Dr. L's email.
Unfortunately, I am out of town this week, but let us meet next Monday.
Before a Physics 101 student ambushes me to tell me about this super cool movie he just watched and asked me if one could theoretically invert time. Damn you, Christopher Nolan. And after one of my chairs calls me to let me know that, yes, there is an opening for me next year. But adjuncts will take a pay cut because of something-something taxes, something-something the dean, something-something the exploitation of non-tenured-track faculty members is the backbone of the capitalist model of academia. A boy with something that sounds a lot like the whooping cough hacks on me on the bus. Icy, slippery rain starts falling the second I get off at my stop. And somehow, only one of the gloves CC knit for me in her short-lived craft phase can be found in my pocket. There is a lot going on. A lot. But I don't care. Because above Lance's toilet paper long text asking me to find out if Dana is going to that U2 concert with Lucas, there's another message. A picture of the Hadron Collider model I saw on Jack's desk. And then just five words.
Would look great in Jell-O.
I smile, reply, I'm thinking cherry, and then make my way through UMass's physics department. Jack.
I forgot that every first Monday of the month we do this thing at George's. Wanna come? Or I can pick you up and we can make scientifically accurate grilled cheese and watch the Cullen family featurette at my place.
I'm grinning so hard, I almost run into the water fountain. Elsie. I need to grade 12 bajillion essays. Jack.
Do what I do. Give them all A's.
Elsie. Do you really? Jack.
I sprinkle in 4 B's and 2 C's and call it a curve.
This time I do walk into the water fountain. A different one. Elsie. No wonder they kiss your ass so hard. Does the thing at George's have a dress code? Jack.
If it does, I plan to ignore it.
Elsie. Henley? Jack.
What's a Henley?
Elsie. It's the name of the shirts you wear every single day. Jack.
They have a name?
Wow. Men. Elsie. Text me George's address. I'll meet you there when I'm done. George's door opens to a round young woman with a knockout smile who hugs me warmly and welcomes me into the largest, most beautiful apartment I've ever seen. They're in the living room, she tells me over the chatter coming from down the hallway. There is a slight accent, and I remember George mentioning that her wife is a Greek finance guru. I'm going upstairs to have an edible and listen to Bach with noise-canceling headphones. Have fun. The first person I find is Andrea. She's in the kitchen when I walk by, transferring tortilla chips into a big bowl. Oh, she looks up at me. You're here. Her smile is surprised, vaguely tense. Hi. I decide to step inside, hoping to project, this doesn't need to be awkward vibes. How are you? Good. She crumples the empty chip bag. It's cool that you're okay with being at George's place, considering. Oh, I flush. So much for not awkward. Yeah, I...
Andy, someone behind me interrupts. George wants to know if...
It's Jack, of course, who stops mid-sentence just like I did, as if completely losing track of the rest of the world.
Dr. Hannaway, you're late.
He says it like he's been waiting for me, like he spent our time apart thinking about the moment he could tease me again. Like I'm the first thing on his mind and the last thing he lets go of. And before I even know it, I'm matching his step forward. I'm pushing up on my toes. I'm pressing my lips to his. I'm smiling against his mouth. It's such a small kiss, but my heart pounds, and so does Jack's when I lay my palm flat against his chest. I pull back, less than an inch, to look at his eyes. It's like the weekend changed something about the people we are. Something fundamental in the shape of my brain and his, too. His lashes are fanning down. He's staring at my mouth and angling his head again and... What did George want to know, Jack? Shit. I fall back onto my heels and turn to Andrea, mortified. I glance at Jack, expecting to find his usual unbothered self, but he's still staring at me, looking a little shaken, like I'm his magnetic north. He clears his throat.
What wine you want?
What are the options? He seems confused.
Red and...
He shrugs, one arm wrapping around my shoulders, like being in my space is second nature. It feels right. Let me guess. Andrea rolls her eyes. White?
Sounds right.
She huffs, picks up the tortilla chip bowl, then steps right between us to march out of the kitchen. We watch her walk away, all blonde waves and excellent posture. And then, Jack steps closer again. Very close. Maybe too close. He leans down to kiss my forehead.
Hi.
I can't look away from his eyes. Hi. We stay like that, silent, for what's probably too long. I can smell his clean skin, his woodsy shampoo, the red flannel I chose this morning from his closet. I don't feel like saying anything, so I don't. Not for a long time. Not until he asks,
"You ready to play?"
Oh, play what?
You'll see.
His smile makes my heart vibrate.
You'll love it, too.
He's right. Even if, for a moment, after Jack's friend Diego has explained Blitz Go to me,
usual rules, but 10 seconds per move.
I consider asking to be left out of the tournament. That's very little time. I chew on my lip. Maybe I shouldn't.
Just go with your instincts,
Jack whispers in my ear. He can, because he's right behind me. Or maybe it's vice versa. I'm the one who's sitting between his open legs, because I've counted 18 people in here and not nearly enough seats.
She can sit here with me while I play my first match,
he tells Diego, to learn. Everybody can see how Jack's hand slides under my shirt and flattens against my abdomen, a solid, pleasant weight against my skin. The way he forgets to move because he's busy staring at me.
Dude!
Diego calls him out the second time it happens.
Right,
Jack says, unruffled. And I spend the next two turns blushing and fidgeting in his lap till his grip tightens on me and his words in my ear are a distracted,
be good.
Something scalding and liquid blooms inside me. Jack still wins. And I must get the hang of it because I win mine, too. I win a practice match against George, who bought four types of cheese because Jack told her it's all I eat. I win against Sunny. I win against another person whose name I don't recall. I win against Andrea in just a handful of moves.
Easy to advance when you're the only sober person in the room,
she mutters, some teeth behind it.
But when I say, you're not wrong.
She bursts into laughter and tips her glass at me. And I'm sure I imagine the hostility. There's wine, beer, shots, academic horror stories, a whiteboard in front of George's fireplace with the brackets written on it. And somewhere around midnight, Blitz Go becomes my favorite thing in the world. I'm having fun. Genuinely having lots of fun. When Sunny announces the final match, her words are slurred. A frame with George's wedding photo is poorly balanced on her head.
The two people who haven't lost a game yet are... Jack, of course. Fuck you, Jack, for making our lives so boring, you periodic motion poster child. And, drumroll please, Elsie. Elsie, please, at least once in my life, I want the opportunity to see this smug-ass face lose at something.
I lost at number of urine sample jars on my desk,
he points out. The frame drops softly into the carpet. Sunny grasps my hand.
Avenge me, Elsie. Please.
I nod solemnly, taking a seat on the side of the black. Jack picks up a stone and leans back in the chair, eyes glued on me, the blue as bright as the sea, a small smile on his lips.
And so we meet again,
he says, loud enough for everyone, and I tune out the way his friends whistle and cheer for me, how they fall silent as we squeeze every last second from each turn. Whenever I look up, Jack's already looking at me. I remember the first time we played at Millicent's house and wonder if it was the first of many. Wonder if Jack owns a board. Wonder if he keeps it in his study. Wonder why, when he looks at me, I forget how scared I am to be seen. Wonder why, when I win, he seems as happy as I feel.
"Well played,"
he says, ignoring the way everyone is ribbing him for breaking his 8-month streak. I nod. Suddenly, again, I'm all heartbeat. I duck inside the bathroom, high on victory. When I slip out, George is right there, scaring the shit out of me.
"Jesus!"
"I fully own that I followed you," she says, leaning casually against the wall.
"Were you listening to me pee?"
"No. Well, yes. But it wasn't the primary purpose. Just a pleasant bonus," she grins. "I thought I'd harass you about the job offer."
"Oh,"
I clear my throat. "I don't have an answer yet. Sorry." Her eyes narrow. "Is Jack trying to influence you one way or the other? Because I will use the cattle prod on him." "Oh, who am I kidding? Of course he'd try to convince you to take the job. I'm reasonably sure that 90% of his spank bank is fantasies of driving you to work and buying you a latte on the way."
"I'm sure he doesn't.
What are your thoughts?" I swallow. Then I glance around the hallway, as though George's niece's macaroni art might hold the key to my academic future. It does not. I take a deep breath. I would love to say yes. George blinks, then smiles, then repeats, "Yes? But," I force myself to continue past her face-splitting grin, "I can't formally accept until I talk with my advisor. Don't worry, though," I add quickly, because her smile is fading fast. "I'm sure I'll get his approval next week. I'll explain how much I want to take the job, and he'll agree that it's the best choice." George stares for a second, looking considerably less excited. "Okay," she nods. And when I'm about to leave, she adds, "For the record, I'd love to continue being your friend, even if you end up not accepting." Her smile is a little strained. "Now peace out. I gotta pee. And no, you can't listen, you weirdo." I'm making my way back to the living room, wondering why it feels like George just resigned herself to me not taking the job, when I overhear it.
"Slumming it with the theorists now?"
It's Andrea's voice from the kitchen. And I stop in the hallway. I can see only about half of Jack. Broad back, light hair curling on his neck, large hands storing dirty dishes in the dishwasher. I should go in and help clean up, but something tells me to skulk around like I'm corporate espionaging in a Bond movie.
"Excuse me?"
he says, confused.
"So, does she know?"
"Who?"
"I'll see."
A quarter of Andrea appears in my field of view. Just her smile, small and private, pointed up at Jack.
"Does she know that you despise people like her?"
"Andy, are you drunk?"
"A bit,"
she laughs nervously.
"Aren't you?" "Elsie must be rubbing off. She must be a great lay if you fucked over Pereira and Crowley for her." "I guess she's hot, in a bland way."
"They fucked over themselves, and you should go back to the others,"
Jack says firmly.
"You're more than a bit drunk if you think telling someone that their girlfriend is bland is a good idea."
"She's not your girlfriend."
"She is if she wants to be. She can be my damn wife if she wants to be."
Jack's losing his usual cool. For all his commanding presence, he's rarely, truly irritated, and Andrea knows this too. There's a fracture on her face, masked by another weak laugh that hurts my ears.
"A theorist, Jack? You having a slow year?"
"Are you serious?"
"You lost to her at Go," she says, petulant, even as she tries to keep her tone light.
I should be offended by what she's saying, but something's stopping me. Something heartbreaking.
"You never lose it, Go.
You said you'd never lose at Go.
I never said that.
Whatever I recognized in her tone, Jack did too. His voice softens.
I bet you lost on purpose, if that's how bad you want her.
She won it fair and square.
They're talking about something else altogether. Something that has nothing to do with Go or anything that happened tonight. She cares about him deeply, I realize. More than that.
Even if I had lost to her on purpose, it has nothing to do with you.
I think it does.
Andy,
he sighs.
I've been honest about how I feel. You said you understood.
Jesus, Jack. She's a theorist.
She's a better scientist than you and I will ever be. You're hurt and I'm trying to cut you some slack, but you're way over the line.
Why are you her champion now? You're you, and she makes up stuff.
Is it because you're sleeping with her?
It's because I know her work.
But you've been saying shit about people like her for 15 years. You're the entire reason her field was discredited. You ruined careers, Jack. And now you're telling me she is the person you're willing to feel something for?
That's it.
Jack orders.
I'm done.
You-
I'm serious. We can talk about this when you're sober, but you need to give me some space before I say something I regret.
If-
Andy.
A second later, Andrea appears in the hallway, eyes shining with tears. She looks at me for a painful, uncomfortable moment, then moves past without a word. I press my shoulders against the wall, trying to stop the centrifuge in my brain.
Does she know that you despise people like her?
He doesn't despise me, does he? No. Honesty, right? No, Jack doesn't despise me. But it's not surprising that Andrea would believe that. It's exactly where I believed he stood, approximately 2 meltdowns in his apartment ago. He's Jonathan Smith Turner. What he did to theoretical physics 1.5 decades ago is in the Library of Congress and has a Wikipedia entry.
What are you doing?
George says, appearing in the hallway.
Oh,
nothing. Just looking at this art. I point to a flower painting to my right.
Do you want it? My wife made it with her ex at one of those paint and sip things. I've been trying to get rid of it.
I laugh shakily. Maybe next time. She enters the living room and I go to Jack, who's staring out the window, back stiff and muscles coiled.
Grumpy because you lost?
I ask, even though I know he's not. I just want to watch the tension leave his body, because maybe it'll leave mine too.
Elsie.
I heard you, I should say. Do you really despise? You said girlfriend. What did she mean when?
But there's no time.
He leans forward, hands around my neck, and kisses me deep for a long time.
People walk by, make jokes, give us looks, but he doesn't stop. I don't want him to either.
Everything okay? I ask when he pulls back. He looks away. Grabs his bottle from the counter and drains what's left.
Wanna leave?
Yeah, sure. The ride to my place is quiet. I feel cold everywhere except on my knee, where Jack's hand rests, his grip just a bit tighter than casual. I'm not sure why I invite him upstairs. Maybe I know what needs to happen. Maybe I'm just trying to hold on to him, to prolong that point of contact. Cece's not home, probably out on faux business, and I'm vaguely relieved. Our place is messy because the last time we cleaned was when Mrs. Tuttle came over to convince us that the green stuff on the wall was totally paint, totally not mold. I try to see the apartment through Jack's eyes, but to his credit, he doesn't act too Smith about the conditions I live in. Instead, he does something so Jack, my chest almost explodes with it. He picks up the top of the credenza like it weighs nothing. His biceps strain against the flannel as he puts it where it belongs, perfectly centered on the bottom part. 3 seconds. For something Cece and I have been putting off for 3 years.
Nice place,
he says, dusting off his hands on his jeans. I laugh softly. It's not. He leans against the table where I've worked, eaten, laughed, cried for the past 7 years.
Then you really should move in with me.
I laugh again. I should thank him for the credenza. It's just...
I wasn't joking. This place is...
There's a bug belly up on the floor.
Don't those live in tropical areas?
Our working theory is that this place is a 4D nexus where multiple climate regions exist at once, and... Were you serious? About moving in? He shrugs.
Would save you money.
Pretty sure half of your rent is more expensive than half of this.
I don't rent. So, you wouldn't have to pay me. I don't care about that.
Right. He doesn't care about money, because he has money. I can't leave Cece, I say lightly. Want to take her in too?
I have an extra room.
I snort, and then realize the look he's giving me. Like, he's serious, and waiting for an answer. I can't move in with you, I tell him. We're not even what? I look away. I feel like total shit, and I cannot understand if he's joking, though he must be. But he looks weirdly earnest, and... A few steps over the cheap vinyl, and he's standing right in front of me. I'm trapped between him and the kitchen sink, and strong fingers come up to my chin, angle it back.
I think we are.
My heart trembles. The blue slice cuts into me like a knife, and what comes out of me is, Andrea wouldn't agree. I didn't mean to bring her up. In fact, I actively meant to avoid the topic forever. But I guess this honesty thing is a little addictive. Jack closes his eyes and swears softly under his breath.
You heard her.
I free my chin, and he understands that I need space. He takes a step back, but I still cannot breathe. I didn't mean to. I exhale. Yes, I did. Jack sighs.
I'm sorry. I'll talk to her when she's calmed down.
I nod. And it should be the end of it. A resolution, nicely wrapped. Instead, I hear myself ask, what about Crowley and Pereira and Cole? And the rest of your students, will you talk to them too? His lips press together, expression shifting to something opaque, like he's bracing for something.
What is this, Elsie?
All of a sudden, the million balls that have been lazily rolling around in the back of my head for the past 2 weeks are bouncing against my skull, and they hurt. Do you know what the problem is? That these people, they admire you. They really, really like you. Your students, your colleagues, your friends. They all want to please you. And for most of them, pleasing you means showing that they dislike what you dislike. And just like that, everything goes back to that Annals article. He exhales.
Elsie.
To be fair, I did the same. I begin pacing around the kitchen. I like you so much, I've been avoiding thinking about it for as long as I could. And to give you credit, you're good at letting me forget. You never feel like the person who wrote it, which makes it easy to pretend that you didn't exist before I met you, that your past actions don't matter. But what Andrea said today, I owe it to my mentor to remember. I can't forget that Lorindo was the editor of the Annals at the time, that he was censured, and I feel the same mix of anger and embarrassment I always do when I think about what happened. The thing is, Jack, you go through life with your man with money confidence, never second-guessing your actions. but there were lots of unintentional victims to what you did.
Lauren Doe wasn't that,
he says flatly. Yes, he was. His career was hugely impacted by...
He wasn't unintentional.
I stop pacing. The words don't immediately sink in. And when they do, I'm still left confused. What? Jack wets his lips.
Lauren Doe was the target.
I don't understand.
I wrote the article because I wanted Lauren Doe's career to be over.
His throat moves.
It was everything else that was unintentional.
My mind spins a million circles, then halts abruptly. Everything else?
I didn't want to become the poster boy for the rift between theorists and experimentalists.
He throws up one hand, impatient. For a moment, I sense hesitation, but his eyes harden, stubborn in a way that's almost young, 17 again.
I wasn't making a statement. All I wanted was Lauren Doe out of physics. And I failed, clearly. Since after screwing over my mother, he's been busy fucking up the life of the single person I've ever been in love with.
What did he... His mother... The single person he...
I... He was my mother's main collaborator, Elsie. He was the reason she couldn't go back to work after I was born. He was the reason she felt... It was the most important thing for her, Elsie. Her work defined her, and he took it away, and...
His voice rises, and then abruptly stops, like he suddenly realized how loud he had gotten. Why did he...
Because he was envious. Because he felt superior. Because of control. He's like that with you, too.
What? I shake my head. No. No, he helps me.
To the point that you don't feel allowed to accept your dream job without his permission? This is not a normal mentor-mentee relationship.
You don't know what you're talking about. Jack simply doesn't get it. Dr. L is the only reason I was able to get into grad school. The reason I was able to pursue my dreams. The reason I'm not currently unemployed. Jack takes a step forward.
Lauren Doe has isolated you and made it impossible for you to realize it. Just like he did with my mother.
He rubs his forehead and I wonder when he last talked about all of this.
It's all in her diaries.
Oh, my God. I cannot believe it. Is that why you wrote the article? Because of those diaries? He exhales a humorless laugh.
No. I wrote it because I went to Northeastern and tried to report Lauren Doe. I was told that I couldn't file a complaint because I wasn't the victim. It fizzled into nothing. And Elsie, I was...
His eyes hold mine for a second, and I see everything. He was young, and he was tired. He was sad. He was angry. He was lonely. He was alone. He was the odd Smith out. He was helpless. He wanted revenge.
Then I wrote the article.
His big shoulders rise and fall.
I used what I knew of physics to make it believable. And I still didn't think it'd get accepted. But somehow it did, and when I read that Lauren Doe was removed as editor,
he shakes his head.
It didn't make me feel any better about the fact that I couldn't remember shit of my mother or about the things Caroline did to me.
His eyes are full of sorrow.
So I stopped thinking about it. And whenever someone reminded me, I ignored them. Until I met you.
My expression hardens. Because I kept bringing it up.
No, Elsie.
His voice is calm, firm.
Because the idea of Lauren Doe doing to you what he did to my mother terrified me.
I scoff. Why didn't you warn me then? We talked about him, about your mother. You had countless opportunities. There's a piece of me, somewhere in the back of my head, that knows how much Jack's admission of vulnerability must have cost. But the larger piece thought this was the first relationship in my life based on honesty. And now, I feel incredibly stupid. You lied to me, over and over.
Would you have believed me if I told you?
He asks, taking a single step closer.
In fact, do you believe me now?
I glance away, suddenly flustered. I believe that you believe it. But maybe you misinterpreted the diaries. It must have been a misunderstanding, because he would never. I owe him so much, and Jack pinches the bridge of his nose.
This is precisely why I didn't tell you. You idolize him and weren't ready to hear any of this. If I'd brought it up, I would have hurt you, and you would have pulled back.
That's not for you to decide. And anyway, why do you think I spent my life lying to people, Jack? I explode. Why do you think I never told Lauren Doe that I hate teaching? Or Cece that her movies are worse than a Windows screensaver? Or Mom that I'm a real fucking human being? Because I'm afraid that if I hurt them with the truth, then they'll leave me. Why is it only a good excuse when it comes to you? I walk away from the table, away from Jack, take a deep breath, willing myself to calm down, staring at the streetlight shining over the rooftop snow. Jack lied to me. After everything, he was the one to lie to me. Not about a movie or wanting to get sushi. He lied to me about something huge. Here's what I think, Jack. I say into the Boston skyline, angry, dejected. You enjoy calling people out on their bullshit, but no one ever calls you out on yours.
My bullshit?
I turn around, not sure what to say. And yet when I look at him, it's right there on my tongue. When you were a teenager, you did something impulsive out of anger, and that I can understand. But after, you went on to have a brilliant career that gave legitimacy to your actions, and you still never bothered addressing them, even after you grew up and should have known better. I wipe my cheek with the palm of my hand because I'm crying. Of course I am. Your actions hurt lots more people than Lauren Doe. And while you didn't think much about the article, I thought about it every day for over a decade. It had terrible consequences for something that I really, really love. And you know what? I've done my best to avoid thinking about it. But I don't know if I can keep on doing that. I don't know if I can stop being angry at you. I don't know if I... My voice breaks and my eyes flood, and I cannot bear to be here with Jack a second longer.
Is that what you are? Angry?
His hand cups my cheek, forcing my eyes to his blurry face.
Or are you just scared? Because you've been more honest with me than ever before.
Maybe. I pull away and see it in the twitch of his fingers that he wants to chase me, but no. Maybe I'm scared. And maybe you're a liar. Where does that leave us? He gives me a long, undecipherable look.
I don't know. Where? You know where we're going here.
He said over and over. And I said no. And then I said yes. And it is where I want to be. But he asked me for honesty and lied in return. And he did beat everything I stand for to a pulp. And I need space. I need to think. You should leave, Jack. He lets out a breath and moves closer, like he wants to wrap himself around me. It's in the way his muscles coil, that impulse to take care of me.
Elsie, come on. You're not.
I am. I'm starting to sob. I want him to touch me, but I cannot stand for him to be here. You always talk about what I want, Jack. You help me learn how to ask for it. Well, I force myself to look him squarely in the eye and show him that I mean what I say, even though I'm not sure I do. There's a burning heat in my chest, scalding, painful. Right now, I don't want to be with you. I need you to give me some space. I see it in his eyes, the moment he realizes that I'm telling the truth. And the second he's gone, I feel it in my bones like nothing before. 24. Electromagnetism. Jack calls me 2 days later during my office hours, but I'm busy explaining to a UMass senior that if she truly must paste an entire paragraph from Wikipedia into her essay, she should at least take out the embedded hyperlinks. He tries again on Friday night when I'm grading the thermo papers that came in late, and one last time on Saturday morning while I'm in bed staring at the popcorn ceiling, thinking about him anyway. I never consider picking up. Not once. Not even when I cannot sleep. Not even after being sullen-tempered, distracted, inefficient for the entire week because I cannot stop replaying my fight with him, slicing it into pieces, retracing what I said, what he said, what our positions are, what algorithms could be used to solve the mess we're in, and the things I feel. Not even when Cece comments on the newly whole credenza, making me miss him in an angry, visceral way. I need answers. On Monday morning, my alarm goes off at 5:30, but I'm already awake, just as I've been for the rest of the night. I dress quickly, without looking at myself in the mirror, and leave as quietly as I can, stopping only to give a suspicious Hedgie a handful of food pellets. It's early enough that the bus to Northeastern is semi-deserted. The driver, me, and a girl in scrubs. Her foot taps to music I cannot hear, and focusing on it makes the thought of what I'm about to do almost bearable. Dr. L isn't in his office yet. He arrives about 20 minutes later and finds me leaning beside his nameplate, a first in 6 years. I study his hands as he unlocks the door, wondering how to bring up Greta Turner. I heard from someone that, I'm sure it's all a misunderstanding. I know these are serious accusations, but please, you wouldn't.
What is it that you wanted to tell me, Elise?
The green chair feels prickly under my thighs. Dr. L's tone is, as usual, encouraging, supportive.
You mentioned something about a job opportunity in your email. Where would that be?
I had not quite forgotten about George's offer, but the topic seems trivial, inconsequential compared to my need to know what really happened between Lauren Doe and Jack's mother. Still, it's why I originally scheduled this meeting. Since I have no idea how to bring up the topic I want to, I clear my throat and start with what's easy. At MIT.
Ah, I see.
His thin lips stretch into a satisfied smile.
The department realized they made a mistake. I'm pleased to hear that.
No, I... That's not it. Georgina Sepulveda wants me to become her postdoctoral fellow.